Today is Wednesday, April 17th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, France's president vows to rebuild the iconic Notre Dame Cathedral as firefighters are hailed as heroes.
We will rise up again and build it again, and we'll show that even in our sadness, we can rebound.
The public awaits the release of the special counsel report on the Trump campaign and possible connections to Russia. Also ahead, a new film about the life of Elton John is being premiered at the Cannes Film Festival. It's all on today's International Edition. Vigils continue as France mourns the loss of the fire-ravaged Notre Dame Cathedral. European Union chief Donald Tusk is calling on the bloc's member countries to help France rebuild.
The burning of the Notre Dame Cathedral has again made us aware that we are bound by something more important and more profound than treaties.
Leaders around the world have been reaching out to offer support following the tragedy. The White House says President Trump has given his condolences to his French counterpart. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
As the fire burned, President Trump stayed aboard Air Force One to watch the TV coverage.
It's one of the great treasures of the world.
From the Vatican to Buckingham Palace to Moscow, world leaders say they're ready to support Paris in rebuilding Notre Dame, including Poland's prime minister, who remembers Warsaw rising from the World War II ruins. Two French tycoons have reportedly pledged nearly $340 million. On CBS This Morning, Paris's deputy mayor said Notre Dame will recover.
We'll rise up again and build it again.
Sagar Magani at the White House.
Here are some of the stories we're following at VOAnews.com. Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela face more U.S. sanctions. Israel. An Israel court, an Israeli court, orders the expulsion of a Human Rights Watch director. Houthi rebels are open to relations with the U.S. and Redress. It's a project highlighting missing, murdered Native American women. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The European Union voted on Monday to move forward with trade talks with the United States, even as France opposed the talks because of the U.S. position on climate change. And there are other issues that could derail the talks before they even start, including agriculture, which the U.S. says must be part of the discussions. The EU says it won't. Joining us now is Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Catherine, are the talks going to proceed despite France's objections?
France will still participate. One country alone cannot hold up these talks, but the French president's office said that he felt that he had to make a moral stand. He felt that most countries that were seeking to open trade talks with the EU, one of the criteria would have been that they had signed up to the Paris Climate Accords and that they were being responsible when it came to climate change and their attitude towards it. And the French presidency felt that the should be no difference made for when it comes to the United States. But in the end, they were overruled, and the green light has been given for these trade talks to start with the United States. The ball is now in the court of the United States to run with it and open up these trade negotiations.
I understand, though, that now the United States is insisting on agriculture being a part of the discussion, and the European says no, it will not be. Could that kill this whole discussion once and for all before it starts?
That is the risk. These negotiations will just not get underway because of that. The United States wants to exclude automobile parts from the talks. The EU is against including agriculture and farm products from these talks. So this is one of the big problems, is that there is no common ground to start off with. That having been said, the European Union feels that it really does have to go that extra mile with getting these trade talks started, because if we think back to July 2018. The EU president, President Juncker, had that meeting with President Trump, and both sides agreed there would be no new tariffs, including on cars and car parts, and that both sides would work towards eliminating any existing tariffs and would improve cooperation.
Do the Europeans feel that Trump has valid concerns, or do they feel like they have no other choice just to go through the motions of these trade talks despite disagreeing with this whole situation?
The European Union feels they have right on their side, particularly when it comes to Airbus industries. It feels that it's in compliance with WTO regulations, and it says that at the same time that makes the allegations that Boeing gets unfair subsidies through the US government as well. So they say that's not really part of it. One gets a feeling this time that the European Union is really trying to push these talks further. For example, they were very clear that they want an elimination on tariffs on all goods. That is what they're aiming for. And they're also hoping that they would get some sort of reduced regulatory barriers. So what that would hope for is that these sort of safety rules and hygiene rules would be exactly the same in the US as they are here in Europe. And that would make it easier for both sides to trade with each other to get good to the other side of the Atlantic much easier.
There's also a lot of concern when you talk about the agriculture issue, that there are some real concerns in Europe about the United States opening their doors to genetically modified crops or possibly things like chicken being washed with chlorine, things that they don't normally see.
Indeed, that is one of the big issues, and that is very prominent actually in Europe. And you see that a lot in the media, that when you talk about American agricultural products coming into the European Union, you do see genetically modified grains being part of this sort of scare. This is something that Europe doesn't have, it doesn't want to have. And also the hygiene towards chicken. This is something that the European Union feels is almost in a way retrograde, and that the EU has made so many steps towards not just having better, more hygienic agricultural products, but also they've made such a big move towards organic products. And it's very common in Europe now to see a lot more farmers turning to organic products. And the US should be raising its market. It feels the US should be raising its level and getting its products into the EU market.
What is at stake with these potential talks?
Well, if they go well, what's at stake is gains of up to 30 billion euros a year in trade between the two countries. So that is at stake. That's, let's say, if it all goes well, then it could be a bright future.
All right, that is Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. The U.S. Justice Department will release on Thursday a redacted version of the nearly 400-page report of Special Counsel Robert Mueller on Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. election, aimed at helping Donald Trump win the presidency. Trump continued his steady drumbeat on Tuesday, saying that he's been exonerated, even as he and the American public await details of the prosecutor's 22-month investigation. Associated Press correspondent Zeke Miller reports there's a mixed atmosphere at the White House before the Mueller report's released.
There's a lot of confidence on the part of the president and some of his senior-most aides that the report will live up to that public summary that was released a couple of weeks ago by the attorney general, that Mueller did not find evidence of collusion. But there's also a lot of apprehension among some of the president's aides and the president himself, talking to people close to him, that the report will certainly dredge up some of the embarrassing incidents of the first 2 years of his administration.
All right, that is Zeke Miller reporting. A Kenyan family has filed a lawsuit in Chicago against American aviation giant Boeing over the March 10th Ethiopian Airlines crash that killed 157 people. VOA's Steve Miller has that story.
Siblings of 29-year-old engineer George Cabau said they wanted to force the company to release documents and emails relating to its 737 MAX 8 model. U.S. lawyer Nomi Hussein, who is also representing one of the American families in the suit, said this lawsuit was filed in Chicago late Monday. The family was seeking to hold Boeing accountable.
Yesterday, we filed a complaint on behalf of George Cabau's parents in United States Federal District Court in Illinois. And by doing that, this will allow us through the discovery process to look into Boeing's decision-making process. So our clients have retained us to find out what happened, why it happened, and to prevent this from happening in the future.
Boeing 737 MAX 8 has been grounded worldwide after two major plane crashes in Ethiopia and Indonesia. A preliminary report released earlier this month indicated Ethiopian airline pilots wrestled with a computer system that repeatedly ordered the nose down because of faulty sensor data. The same system was a focus of the preliminary report into the October Lion Air crash in Indonesia, which killed 189 people.
Boeing told the world this plane is safe to fly, and Boeing allowed me, my family, your family, our friends, our co-workers around the world to continue to fly on a dangerous plane that it knew was dangerous in order to put profit over safety.
Dozens of families are already suing Boeing over the Lion Air crash, and three lawsuits have already been lodged over the Ethiopian Airlines crash by families of two Americans, including consumer activist Ralph Nader's great-niece, a Rwandan. Lion Air's co-founder on Monday lashed out at Boeing's handling of the accidents. Cabal's sister, Esther Cabal Wanyoke, choked up as she told a press conference that she wanted to use her brother's death to improve aviation safety.
We cannot replace him, and he cannot and shall not be replaced. But we pray that by what is happening, my parents especially, and us as his siblings and all other loved ones, can use his demise to ensure safe travel for all.
Boeing has previously declined to comment on individual lawsuits and has directed inquiries about the crash to investigating authorities. Boeing had no immediate comment on this latest case. Kenya had the largest number of citizens on the flight from Addis Ababa to Nairobi. At least 32 Kenyans were on board, although that number may be larger because some of the travelers were dual nationals, and the full manifest has still not been released. Steve Miller, VOA News.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. An Alaskan federal court recently blocked the Trump administration's plans for oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, upholding protections on 128 million acres of public waters, where its remote location with ice and winter darkness make cleanup from a major spill close to impossible. But environmentalists say the Trump administration is now poised to unveil the Interior Department's revised five-year plan for offshore oil and gas leasing, with a draft plan that they say is expected to dramatically expand offshore drilling off of multiple other coasts. Neil Lawrence is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He joins us now. Neil, I'm confused as to what's happening here. If a judge just banned offshore drilling in the Arctic, what does this all mean?
So even before getting to a plan, the country has an offshore drill program, and it runs for another 3 years. The Trump administration is planning to jettison that and adopt a much more aggressive, much more dangerous program. But before doing that, President Trump tried to do away with protections for 128 million acres of some of our most sensitive and biologically rich offshore areas. Those protections were adopted by President Obama, and they were adopted because of the grave risks to those waters and to the communities and shorelines along. And also because these are very difficult places to get oil and gas. It would take decades to get it. There's no benefit to the American people of running those risks by by the time the oil can make it into production, will be so far away from fossil fuels that there wouldn't be any market.
So drilling in the Alaskan Arctic is now off the table?
It is now, by law, illegal to lease for oil and gas development in 98% of our Arctic Ocean. But almost as importantly, in 31 enormous deep water canyons off the Atlantic coast as well, which are also extremely biologically rich, really important fisheries, the sport and commercial fisheries, and habitat for whales and turtles and many other deep sea creatures.
I understand, though, that the Trump administration has plans elsewhere to start some massive oil drilling.
So in getting ready to jettison the existing offshore energy program for the nation, the Trump administration has proposed to open to drilling virtually the entire offshore around the entire nation, all around the lower 48, all around Alaska. They haven't made a final decision to do that, but they made an initial proposal to do that, and they have sparked a huge outpouring of resistance, particularly up and down the eastern seaboard, where Republican and Democrat governors alike and tens of thousands of businesses have risen up and made clear that they won't stand for it.
Will this face legal challenges before it ever gets off the ground?
When and if the Trump administration follows through and expands offshore drills, there will be legal challenges. I think that's a certainty. The American public as a whole is strongly opposed to expanding offshore oil and drill leasing. In fact, a couple of years ago, my group, the Natural Resources Defense Council, commissioned a poll which showed that Americans wanted all of the Atlantic and all of the Arctic Oceans permanently protected from oil and gas leasing by a 23-point margin.
How likely is it that all of this will be allowed to go forward?
We don't know what the Trump administration is prepared to propose. We do know that under the judge's order, the permanent protections barring leasing have been restored for almost all of the Arctic Ocean and these important areas off the Atlantic. Whether the Trump administration will back off on its proposal to expand drilling into essentially all of the other offshore areas around the entire United States, it would be a mistake to underestimate the willingness of this administration to trample on public opinion in trying to further the interests of the oil and gas industry. Their record on that is pretty appalling.
Can you just explain why environmentalists believe that this is a mistake?
Where we drill, we spill. It's essentially inevitable. And those spills cannot be properly cleaned up. We had this enormous spill in the Gulf of Mexico years ago, the Deepwater Horizon disaster. That spill went for 90 days before it was plugged, and probably somewhere around 20 or 25% of the oil was recovered. The rest of it polluted the oceans, oiled beaches, ruined businesses, killed fish and other marine creatures. There is a terrible price to be paid. It's even worse in the Arctic Ocean, because there, the seas are covered with ice for 8 or 9 months out of the year. The region is shrouded in darkness for 6 months out of the year. When the water is open, it's subject to storms. There's essentially no way to stop or fix an oil spill. These are among the worst places in the world to try to get our energy. In many places, also, it puts at risk an enormous number of jobs and businesses. Up and down the Atlantic seaboard, there are 1.7 million jobs that are dependent on healthy and clean and pollution-free ocean waters and coastlines. Those jobs, they're the backbone of many of the economies, and they are put at risk from the drilling. But last, and this is really important, we know that we have to get off of oil and gas, or we're going to burn up the planet. I know that sounds extreme, but the science is quite clear that we already have discovered and proven 4 times the fossil fuel reserves we can possibly use if we're going to try to avoid the worst effects of climate change. Not for us, but for our kids and our grandchildren and generations to come.
All right, that's Neil Lawrence with the Natural Resources Defense Council.
This is Science in a Minute.
There is clothing that can help cool you down on hot days. And, of course, there are a number of clothing options for keeping warm on colder days. Now, researchers at the University of Maryland say they have developed a new fabric that not only can cool or warm, but can automatically sense conditions to determine which mode to activate. On hot days, the fabric opens up and allows body heat to escape. On cold days, it limits the amount of heat that is allowed to pass through it, allowing the body to retain heat. The researchers say their new fabric is made with a special yarn that consists of fibers of two different synthetic materials. The yarn is then coated with carbon nanotubes, which is considered to be a unique type of lightweight and conductive metal. The developers admit that more research must be conducted before the fabric can be made available commercially. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Jordan Peele's recent horror blockbuster Us follows his directorial debut in 2017 with the Oscar-winning horror film Get Out. Critics and wide audience have hailed the African-American filmmaker as the pioneer of black horror films as metaphors on social, economic, and racial injustice. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
You know how sometimes things line up? Coincidences? Since we've been up here, they've been happening more and more. It's like there's this black cloud hanging over us.
The new horror film Us explores the monster lurking within ourselves in the form of the evil doppelganger.
There's a family in our driveway.
What are you people?
Filmmaker Jordan Peele explores the idea of the shadow self,
which comes up in many cultures, many mythologies, and it tends to be this sense that there is a darker self that we suppress, and we suppress it because we are afraid of what it means, and it holds our guilts and our evil.
Good to see another brother around here.
Yes, of course it is. Something wrong?
Peele says he uses horror to address race relations and the growing socioeconomic divide in America.
Yes, yes. Chris was just telling me how he felt much more comfortable with my being here.
That's nice.
His previous horror film, Get Out, was about old white rich people extending their lifespan by transplanting their brains into young black people's bodies. His current film, Us, is about the reckoning for privileged Americans by their disadvantaged selves. Academy Award-winning actress Lupita Nyong'o plays both a middle-class mother and wife, Adelaide Wilson, and her disturbing self, Red, coming after her.
So oftentimes we feel that the monster is from outside of ourselves, you know, they're from outside our borders and, you know, outside our homes. But in this story, the monster is really within our very selves. And it's about embracing that, you know, or at least recognizing it.
Horror film expert Andrew Scahill says Jordan Peele ushers in the era of black horror movies.
I think we're in an incredibly exciting time for horror right now. I think minorities taking the reins of this genre, which, to be honest, had been really exclusionary, if not antagonistic towards them in the past.
Now, he says, they are the main characters and are there to stay.
And Jordan Peele has said that he doesn't plan on casting a white actor in a lead role from here on out because that movie's been done.
Scahill says the concept of the monster within is as old as Jekyll and Hyde or Frankenstein. The same applies with the horror genre as a platform for social commentary.
When I show Nosferatu, I show the image of that vampire against caricatures of Jewish people during the period. King Kong is certainly a metaphor for the slave trade. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, depending on who you talk to, is about communism or McCarthyism or consumerism or all of those things.
Jordan Peele's horror films reveal the same anxieties through the African-American perspective. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight.
The Elton John biopic Rocket Man will premiere at the Cannes Film Festival next month. Rocket Man will screen May 16th at the French Riviera Festival 2 weeks before it's to be released in the United States. Paramount Pictures on Tuesday confirmed the premiere, which Variety first reported. The film stars Taron Egerton as the British singer and pianist. It's directed by Dexter Fletcher, who stepped in to helm the Freddie Mercury biopic by Bohemian Rhapsody after Bryan Singer was fired. Rocket Man is more of a musical biopic hybrid. John is himself a producer on the movie. The 72nd annual Cannes Film Festival runs May 14th to 25th. Long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, no. I'm a rocket man. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. In fact, it's cold as hell, and there's no one there to raise them. If you did, and all the science I don't understand, it's just my job 5 days. Rocket Man, Rocket Man. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, no.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.